I'm Danny Brown, and you're listening to Life Through a Dram.
Welcome to Life Through a Dram, where Danny Brown shares his take on life, being a better person, and appreciating the here and now, all accompanied by a dram and a fine single malt whiskey. And now, here's your host, Danny Brown.
Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of Life Through a Dram. This week I'm having something that was recommended to me by my friend Sam Fiorella, who actually, funnily enough, I went on a return to my home land of Scotland last year, where we took a whiskey tasting trip, and it was amazing. But anywho, this whiskey is the Auchintoshan Three Wood. Now, this is an award-winning whiskey. I've never tried Auchintoshan before, I'll be honest, but you know, Sam made a recommendation. And Sam likes a good single malt like I do. So anywho, this one is made in three different cask types. There's American bourbon, there's also Spanish Olasora sherry, and there's a little bit of Pedro Ximenez sherry casks all mixed in. And they distill it in these three wood casks to give you a really, it's a really like a toffee tasting sherry flavor to that. So anywho, this is what I'm drinking today. So Schlangivar. Today I want to talk about stories and stories that we have to tell as people. We often, you know, I feel we don't tell our stories enough, and there's a lot of things that we can inspire in others if we open up and tell our own stories. I mean, for example, you know, and this might not be an inspiring story, but one of my favorite stories from when I was growing up is James Bond. So like the original James Bond, Sean Connery, he used to deliver milk to my grandmother when he was a teenager in the, you know, the outskirts of Edinburgh at a place called, I believe it's Coatbridge. I could be wrong there, but anywho. So when Sean Connery was about 14, 15 year old, he helped on a milk delivery run. Now, back in Scotland in these days, and even when I was growing up, we had milk delivered to our doorsteps. And I was actually, I also got a job as a milk boy where I joined a milk driver. He drove a milk float. It's a little, sorry, almost like an electronic little vehicle with three wheels. Craziest vehicle you've ever seen. And it would have milk and yogurt and some other dairy products on the back, and you deliver to your customers. So anywho, Sean Connery, as it was, a 15, 16-year-old, delivered to my grandma. And she loved telling the story. She'd always sort of embellish it a little bit and say, oh yeah, that Sean Connery, that James Bond came to my door. He gave me a special delivery, all right. And she was a cheeky, flirty woman. I loved her to bits. So that's always something that I find interesting. You know, it's a nice little bit of trivia, if you like, when, you know, you're just getting to know someone and conversation comes around. But there's other stories that you can share. One of the things, I'm a dad. I've got two young kids. They're currently, my daughter is 7 and my son is 8, although at the beginning of May, he will turn 9. So, you know, they're getting older. But when I was around my son's age, I had and I've mentioned this before in one of my earlier podcasts, I had a really crappy childhood. My stepfather frequently beat me. He beat my mother. My sister kind of escaped the worst of it, thankfully, but he really went to town on me. That gave me a determination, I guess, as I started to get older and thought about having children or, you know, being a father of my own. That early trauma, abuse, whatever, made me determined that I would never be that kind of dad to my kids. And I also wanted to ensure that my children sees what a loving relationship and good parenting should be like. So my wife and I, we're unafraid to show, you know, love and emotion in front of our kids. We'll give each other cuddles, you know, we'll tell each other we love each other, and we'll ensure that our kids know it's okay to show open emotion and really, you know, let yourself be vulnerable emotionally and not be afraid to tell people how you feel, and that it's okay for kids to see what love looks like. Moving forward a little bit, and I've written about this on my blog, And it's not something I'm proud of. It's very much something I'm not proud of, but and this is the wrong thing to say, I'm not glad it happened, but I'm glad it gave me the opportunity to learn, you know, from that time and be a better person moving forward. But back when I was around 13, 14, we used to be on an estate in Edinburgh where I was growing up. And there'd be a bunch of us kids, us boys and girls, hanging about, having fun or whatever. But now and again, there'd be a bunch of us boys, maybe four or five of us, and we'd chase one of the girls and we'd think it'd be fun and we'd catch up and we'd, you know, cop a feel or try to kiss them. And at the time, and this is not condoning in any way whatsoever, but at the time, we saw that as fun. It's like, hey, you know, it's harmless fun. It's just a kiss. It's just, you know, having a quick feel. Whatever, you know, was going through our heads at that time when we were 12, 13 years old. And it wasn't until I spoke to one of the girls who I became really friendly with, maybe a few months later, that I finally understood that it wasn't fun by any means. And even though the girl didn't really believe we were going to truly harm her with this so-called fun that we had, she was still scared. You know, she had, even though we were friends, she had four or five boys chasing her. And when we caught up, we'd, you know, have a little bit of fun. And that was not good. You know, and looking back on that time, I feel ashamed of that. And as I mentioned, I wrote a post, I think it was entitled, I Was a Me Too Guy Too, and I'm Sorry. And you can find it on my blog. You can find it, I believe I cross-posted on Medium. But it was an apology to A, the girls that we used to chase, or the girl, especially the girl that, you know, that had that fear and made me realize what an idiot we had been. And it was an apology to all women as well, for guys that feel it is just a bit of fun and can't understand the pain and the fear and all the other bad emotions that women feel, or young girls feel, if it's, you know, boys or teenage boys and young girls or teenage girls, how much pain and fear they feel when it comes to issues like that. You know, so for me, that was a good learning experience, a really good learning experience. And it's something that I encourage my own son. I'm trying to raise him as a good person that sees, you know, his female classmates and female friends as equals, and how to treat them properly, and how to ensure that his friends treat them properly. And if his friends don't, then he needs to step up and say that's not right and why that's not right. You know, so that's a good learning experience for me, and hopefully my son, as I, you know, teach him to grow up to be a good person. Same with my daughter. I teach her that she's a strong, independent, you know, young lady, and no one has the right to do or say anything that she feels uncomfortable with. And she has full control over herself, her body. I mean, she's only 7, but she needs to, you know, I want her to know that she is in full control. She is the power to say no at any time. And if anybody oversteps that boundary, what she has to do and how she has to do it, and that mummy and daddy will always be open. She will never, ever be at blame for anything that may happen to her or anything that upsets her. So we want to let her know that we'll always be here for her. One of the stories that I really liked that I found inspiring was I read this in the Tribes book by Seth Godin, who's he's a well-known marketer, but, you know, he's one of these guys that may not, you know, everybody may not know. But he had a book out a few years back called Tribes, and in it he spoke about the example of Chris Sharma. Now, Chris, he was an American, or still is an American rock climber, and what he did was he completely changed the way that rock climbers look when it comes to scaling cliffs. Previous to Chris coming along and Chris inventing the dyno, I guess, the standard way of rock climbing was a left-right, you know, approach. You put your left arm up, your right foot up, your left arm up, your right foot up, and you kind of climb that way, and you look and you move from left to right looking for advantageous points to get a good grip. Now, what Chris did is he actually jumped upwards. He didn't go the left and right route. He jumped up to get a grip and pull himself up. And that became known as the dyno. Now, that's for someone to do that when the standard approach was always the left and right approach, is very risky. Because when you're rock climbing, you don't have an escape route, right? Okay, you may be obviously attached to the rock. You've got your harness and you've got your tools that you use to climb up. But if you make a mistake and that the tools fail you, that's a long way down. So for Chris to come out with something like that and really change the way that people approached the way and the art of rock climbing was pretty amazing. And since then, more rock climbers experimented and the dyno became a standard. So without Chris, who knows where rock climbing would have still been today. There's I wrote a book a little while back called A Little Book of Inspiration. And one of the stories I featured in there, which I found A, incredibly humbling, and B, amazingly inspiring. And it was a true testament to determination overcoming adversity, is a story of a little boy called Jesse James Arrigo. Now, Jesse is in Canada. And what happened was, even before this kid was born, he had, adversity to overcome. His mother suffered from cervical cancer. She had to have surgery. And following that surgery, she was advised that she could never have children. Well, a year later, Jesse was born. So adversity number one, done. In 2012, this is when tragedy struck, and Jesse's story really began. He was over at his grandparents, and his grandparents have a pond outside. Jesse was playing outside and unfortunately fell into the pond, and he was in there for a little while before he was discovered. Now, when he was discovered, his mother started giving him CPR as they waited for the emergency services to arrive. Once emergency services arrived, the paramedics took over, and then once paramedics were getting to the hospital, that's when the emergency team took over at the hospital. Now, in that first hour from the Jesse being discovered until he arrived at the hospital, he suffered 2 cardiac arrests. He then suffered seizures, dystonia, and double pneumonia. This is all within 1 hour to a little kid that was underwater for a certain amount of time with no oxygen coming into him. So you can imagine how bad this situation is. And the diagnosis was not good. The doctors knew how long he'd been underwater without oxygen. And quite frankly, the doctors expected him to die. Jesse wasn't expected to leave the hospital. Of course, kids are very stubborn. Jesse had other plans. Doctors told his parents that Jesse would never eat unaided, but now he can swallow on his own. They also told him that he'd never speak again because of the damage to his brain. But today he can whoop at the sound of music. I love that especially. I mean, I find music very therapeutic and especially inspiring, depending on your mood and how the music can lift you when you need lifted. So the fact that Jesse can whoop at the music is awe-inspiring. They also said that he'd never understand the world around him. It would just be a strange place and he wouldn't recognize anything. But today, he can actually look at people and track the movement of these people and the noise they make. Huge, huge achievement. I mean, his battle, it's far from over. He had a lot of serious injury, internal injury, brain injury when he was younger, and that has to be overcome. That's not something that will happen. And as you can see, it's a slow process. But he's fighting it from home as opposed to the hospital that it was feared he'd never leave, or as the doctors feared, he'd die in. So, that story, if that doesn't inspire you, I really don't know what else I can give you, honestly, guys. And the point is, we all have stories to share, okay? I shared the one about my grandma. I shared the one I wasn't so proud about when I was younger. But I believe that these stories are who, that it makes me what, who we are. And it's how we adapt to these stories and share them that can help others grow and improve themselves or do something differently in their own lives and be confident in sharing their own stories. Because if we can share the good in the world and encourage others to do so, and you know how we may have started in a bad place, but we've got to a better place. If we can be open enough to share that and encourage and inspire others to share these stories with their communities and their friends and peers, etc., then the good will forever outshine the bad that's in the world. And you know what? That's something that's got to be worth aiming for, isn't it, guys? Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this week's show. If you enjoy it, you know, please, you know, share with your friends if you feel that they'd enjoy the show as well. Leave a review on iTunes. That's always, you know, worth an extra slangevar from me. And until next week, guys, be yourself and take care. Slangevar.
This has been Life Through a Dram. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.